Blog Talk Radio.
Council of Elders call-in talk show. Today is December 11, 2021, and we have a great show lined up for you today. Just want to talk a little bit about the Council of Elders concept before we get started. It's a concept where elders in the community try to instill wisdom and understanding and help younger people navigate through life, as well as learn things from younger people themselves, because they have a lot to share with older people. But today we're going to have a special guest on the show, Alan Rook, who is an insurance executive. I don't know if he would say that, but he's been in the business for a long time. And we're going to be talking about the stages of life and how insurance products can help you through the various stages of your life. We're going to be talking about life insurance with living benefits, and we're going to be talking about index universal life insurance, and we're going to close it out talking about annuities. So this should be a very interesting show. I'm looking forward to it. Alan Rook, how you doing today,
yes,
man? Welcome to the show.
I thank you for having me. This is quite an honor. I'm excited to be a part of this. And it's looking out, it's very cold temperatures up here in the mountains of Northern California. But snow is on the horizon, but we definitely need it.
Yeah. I'm down in the valley, Alan, and we're getting the runoff from all that snow, which is making the grass greener and the ponds and creeks and everything higher. So it's all good. Where exactly are you, Alan?
I'm on the way to Tahoe. I'm by a little train town called Colfax on Interstate 80. So it's right there, the Grass Valley, the Gold Country, they call it, where they discovered gold 150 years ago. And so it's above the fog, and it's pretty much below the snow line. So we get a little of each, but it's a very, very nice temperature to be at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Alan. Now I know you've been in the insurance industry for quite a while, but tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. Well, I've been in the insurance business for 45 years. That's kind of hard for me to say. It's kind of, as I look back, it's been pretty amazing. Never thought I'd grow up to be an insurance agent, but I was, just interested in people and finances and numbers and helping people, and it was just kind of a natural progression. And over the years, I've gone from being just an agent, frontline agent, to more of a managing agent. And I've taught many, many classes on the insurance business. I've held many seminars on different types of products and strategies and benefits. And it's been a real privilege to be able to help people to get rid of the mystique or the stain of the word insurance, and to see how it can be used as a tool if people understand it. And that's really the most important thing.
Right, right. I find that as I talk to, I'm in the insurance business too, by the way, folks, but I find that a lot of people that I talk to have sort of old ideas about insurance. It's like the insurance man coming knocking on mama's door, collecting I don't know, 25 cents, and that old mystique is still there. Now it's more like financial products. Alan, I know you have a lot to say. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that mystique, yeah, that there's a lot of misunderstandings, but that generation that you're mentioning, as they got into those people that did that 25 cents a week type of policy, when they got to be in their retirement age, 65 and so forth, besides their home, that was the only other cash asset that they had to their name, was the savings and their life insurance. So as strange as that sounds, it was still something that benefited them in the long run. Those old concepts still hold value.
Right, right, right. Well, you're putting everything in perspective too for me. I can see where you're coming from there. Now, I know you talk about the stages of life. Let me just say this before. If you're listening and during our conversation you have a question or a comment for Alan, press the number 1 on your phone and we'll entertain your questions or comments. But, Alan, I know you're very passionate about the stages of life as it relates to insurance products. Could you give us some insight on that?
Well, sure. You know, the thing about life insurance is the only insurance that we're guaranteed ever to use. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. It's not like auto insurance. We may never have a car accident. It's or our house may never burn down or be burglarized. I mean, it's life insurance is basically the only type of coverage that we're certain to use, and if used correctly, it could be a marvelous return on the money, whether we die early or we die later. But there are sacrifices that have to be made to understand that the older we get, the more expensive and the harder to obtain insurance becomes. So we need to prepare early. But you know, the initial part of the stages of life is for children. Many people say, insurance on children is a waste of time and money. But no, really, if a person, parents start early and get a small $25,000, $50,000 life insurance, cash value policy on a child that builds dividends and savings, you know, by the time that they're in their early 20s, if they can do so many different things to with that policy, whether they cash it in, whether they borrow out of it for their first car, or whether they freeze it in time and let it grow, because they will. It just so many reasons. And let's face it, children do die. I mean, nobody wants to think about that, but it is something that can happen. But if the policy is held long enough, it's generally a break even on the money, and so you get the money back and you've had protection all of that time. And that's really, if you stop and think about insurance that way, it's a very small price to pay for an unexpected return when it's needed the most. But when someone, you know, turns the 20s and 30s and they start to develop a family, they need all the term insurance that they can get. And term insurance is cheap. They can get, they're healthy, they can get a lot of it for a very, very, very low amount of money. So building a family, it's really the time for as much life insurance as they can in a term policy. But when people start to turn the corner, they get into their 40s, 50s, they realize that they're not getting younger. They realize that they need stronger glasses and their hair's getting grayer. It's time to start you know, worrying about, you know, 30, 40 years from now. And insurance has become harder and harder to get. So they can then at that time convert the term policies apart or all of it that they already have, or they can look around for new kinds of policies that are on the market, other carriers perhaps that have a product that maybe is something that is going to be more useful. There's products that we'll talk about, IULs, but there's GULs, which are guaranteed universal life or index universal life. And the time to prepare for retirement is when they're working, the children are leaving home, they're starting to understand what life is all about. And the little extra cost that is incurred now will create tremendous savings later on in their retirement years, because it just, as time goes on, the value of the dollar gets less and less, but still the need of insurance will always be there. We have so many different things in retirement. When people have Social Security or a retirement plan, when they die, the income is cut back dramatically. We call it the retirement cliff. So insurance will always be needed, whether for burial, whether for continuing on a retirement income, Social Security or otherwise, and for you know, just providing a better retirement for the one that's left behind. And so the time to start preparing for that is in the 40s and 50s. But if someone is now in their 60s or 70s and they go, I kind of missed that boat. Well, there's a couple of different options depending on their health. If they're healthy, they can still get a pretty decent policy that will last them their entire life. But if they aren't healthy, there are plans that will at least provide for burial. They're not cheap, but, you know, they can be tailored to the problems that a person has. How sick they are, you know, would depend on, you know, the sicker they are, the higher the price. The healthier they are, the less expensive. So the key is to get something like that before bad health situations settle in. So we all die sooner or later, some later, but it's the only savings account that will always be there when we need it. And if you think about what you need at the right time, that's the right product, and you'll never be disappointed or unhappy, because it will always do the job that it's meant to.
Right.
So
right.
That's
one thing you mentioned, Alan. You talked about the insurance for children and how you can develop a savings for them using the life insurance. Can you kind of highlight a little bit on that cash value?
Sure.
I
bought for my kids, and I've always recommended to others, is to always buy what we call a participating whole life on a child. And the reason is it pays dividends, and you can get a small policy, $25,000 or $50,000, very easily. But it builds cash value, it builds dividends, and by the time that they're 20, there's generally about the same amount in the cash as the premiums have been paid. So if a person's put in, let's say it's been $500 a year for a policy, by the time they get to age 20, they paid $10,000 in premiums. There's generally about $10,000 in cash value. They can either cash it in, they can borrow on it, or what many people do is they take a reduced paid-up policy. It's a lesser cash, lesser life insurance, but it still pays dividends. And they can just park it, and that policy will keep up with inflation. The death benefit will continue to grow. The cash will continue to grow. And they'll always have at least a policy there, no matter when they die, for at least covering burial costs and maybe extra. Whereas other life insurance will be used for mortgages or, you know, college education or whatever. If nothing else, what they start at age one or zero will last their entire life and will always be enough to put, you know, take care of burial costs.
Right. So they can actually, at some point, if they want to, leave the cash value there and let it grow without them even paying on the policy. Is that how it works? Or is it like
That's
paid
correct.
Up? Or?
And it's accessible down the road. Let's say years later, an emergency comes up and their car breaks down, they need a new transmission, and they need money quick. It's a great source that they can borrow on at a very nominal interest rate. Sometimes it's a break even. And it's there is an emergency. It should be paid back, but it's always their money that they can borrow out tax-free and use for whatever they want, but it should be repaid. But it's great for emergency funds.
Right. I want to stress that if you borrow off of your cash value, then it and correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, it reduces the face amount of your policy. Like if you have a $50,000 policy and you borrow $1,000 from it, now you only have basically a $49,000 until you pay that cash value back. And if you don't pay it back,
that's absolutely
then
correct.
It builds interest. So when I first got into the insurance business, I didn't know that. And I didn't tell people.
no, you're right. And it's really a tool that can be used correctly, but you don't want to use a hammer when you need a saw, you know. So if the person understands that money is there to use for emergencies and pay it back just like they would any loan, then it's a wonderful tool. But if it's used incorrectly, well, you know, it will suffer the consequences.
Right. Well, that's anything in life. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, Alan, the COVID situation now. How are the insurance companies responding to that?
Well, you know, this has all been factored in, and the policies that were sold years ago were based on old mortality tables, and people today are blowing past those mortality tables. So the older policies really plan for people to die younger, and which they have. And so it really, the COVID situation has not impacted the insurance industry's assets, reserves, ability to pay, or anything in any way, shape, or form, even though we might seem that it's just been, you know, a lot of deaths. Really, in the big picture, there haven't been that many overall. So the fact that the insurance industry has withstood things like the Spanish influenza and many other things that were far, far worse in terms of numbers, I mean, they're set up to handle this stuff. And how they reacted, though, when the pandemic began to really take shape, is to alter and adjust and scrutinize their underwriting to make sure that they weren't taking on any unnecessary risk at that point, which was very prudent, very frustrating on our part, but very prudent on their part. And so they're going to come through this thing no problem. It's just it's a blip on the radar.
Right. You talked about converting a term policy into a permanent policy. You know, like you said, when people get in their 40s and 50s. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's that a person, once they begin to, like, buy a house and buy their car and start to buy and accumulate things, and so they're financially in a better shape. Kids are grown, maybe off to college, maybe moved out. There's more money to be had. Salaries have increased, you know, for various reasons. And so to convert a term means that you can take the term you've got and make it a permanent policy without any underwriting. The companies generally have a conversion privilege that says that, you know, we'll give you a permanent policy, cash value or otherwise, for the rest of your life without any new underwriting. And that's really good if a person's health has changed. They've gotten cancer or they've, you know, been in a car wreck and totally mangled or whatever the case, I mean, that can be a really a tremendous, tremendous value. However, not always the case because the industry changes and the company that you've got may not offer maybe the most current type of plans that you're looking at. So therefore, that would then you would not want to convert into a certain company if they didn't have the new products for the cash value plans or permanent plans that are being offered today. So the conversion privilege is an option. It's a good thing if you can't get anything else. It's a good thing if your company offers the current new plans. But if, like I said, if they don't offer the new plans, you may just want to find a new one, buy it, and then cancel the old term policy.
Right, right, right. And speaking of new plans, let's talk for a second about some of the new plans, life insurance with living benefits. Talk to us about that, Alan.
Well, first of all, before the life insurance plans with living benefits came about, a plan came about. It was started back in the 80s by a doctor, actually, that his comment was that he could help and patch people together physically, health-wise, but he couldn't fix their finances because he saw a lot of people. He was a heart surgeon. A lot of people that got a new heart or survived a heart surgery, and they were financially devastated. So from that was born a product called Critical Illness. Now, if you go to countries like Japan or the United Kingdom or Canada or these countries that have socialized medicine and ask any of their citizen if they have heard of a critical illness policy, almost unanimously they'll say, oh, yeah, I've got one of those. It's really great. And but in America, where they're now being sold, you ask 1,000 people and maybe 2 people have heard of it. And what critical illness is, it's very simple. As a standalone, just that product by itself, if a person has a heart attack, stroke, or cancer, which we know about every 30 seconds in this country, someone is either has a heart attack, has a stroke, or told that they have a form of cancer, every 30 seconds, it is probably the greatest catastrophe in our economic system, because most of those people, the majority of them today, based on modern medicine, will end up surviving that heart attack, that stroke, that cancer, but they come through it actually devastated financially. And that's the horror of getting, you know, not dying, I guess. So this product of critical illness is designed to pay a lump sum that is tax-free with no obligations or strings attached, the amount that the policy was purchased at. So if a person bought, let's say, a $50,000 critical illness policy, which a person starting at age 40 should, you know, it's good for any age, but in the 40s, people should really start adding that to their portfolio. If a person, let's say, has a $50,000 policy and they're told that they've got cancer, all they have to do is submit the paperwork to the insurance company, and within a month they'll have a check for $50,000 in their account. And there's no obligation. They could take it to the Vegas and try and double it or triple it or lose it. There's just no strings attached. I mean, that's the amazing thing about it. And then let's say a while later the person has a heart attack. Well, just get the paperwork together. They don't even have to be hospitalized. They don't even have to lose their job. They just had a heart attack. And they submit the paperwork and they get another $50,000. And then, I mean, there's a list of about 18 different things that are covered under plans like this. But those are the most common: heart attack, stroke, cancer, renal failure, et cetera, that the most the common things that break people financially. And I'm being facetious by saying you take it to Vegas and double it, because I know of many people that have experienced those kinds of medical conditions that did lose their job, that did, their wife had to, or husband, the spouse had to quit their job to help the other one. They had to refurbish the house for wheelchairs or, you know, there's so many things. But the beautiful thing about this product is you could collect as many times as the policy has benefits for. It's practically never ending. The cost will not go up based on usage. You will not be canceled based on usage. And the beautiful thing is if you have this product and you have it, you're let's say 20 years or whatever, and you happen to die peacefully in your sleep and never had the misfortune of using it, the insurance company returns all the premiums as a death benefit, tax-free. Here's your money back. Sorry you didn't use the policy, but we're giving you your money back. So in that sense, it's a win-win situation. You win if you use it. You win if you don't. But it's a matter of endurance, of hanging on to it, realizing that 75% of us will experience a need for that policy in our lifetime. But those fortunate that don't still benefit by the return of all the premium. Now, if a person is, let's say, is not really able to, let's say, buy both a life insurance and the standalone policy, which still is the best way to do it, is to have your life insurance separate from the critical illness like you would your auto insurance or your homeowner's insurance. It's better to have two products. However, the industry has designed a policy that's got what we call ABRs, accelerated benefit riders, that actually include a critical illness and also chronic illness inside the policy. Now, how that works is, let's say a person has a $500,000 policy and they happen to get a heart attack. Well, the company will get a claim form out, and then based on a lot of factors, how severe it is, the age of onset, the effect of life expectancy, the insurance company will say, well, based on our calculations, we want to give you, because it was a minor heart attack, we want to give you $25,000. So you say, well, you know, that's going to help. But the insurance company comes back and says, yeah, but we just reduced your $500,000 policy now down to $450,000. And so they take out more than they give you, but you still have some insurance left over. But let's say it's a massive heart attack and you're on life support, but you pull through, that might be worth more like $250,000. And they ramp it up based on how severe it is. But the problem is, of course, if you know, it will devastate not only the life insurance you've got, but also your ability to get more life insurance later on. So you kind of got to balance how much you would take, and if you really absolutely need it, well, that's what it's there for, you know. But just realizing it will bite into your life insurance. Likewise, if someone has a stroke and is paralyzed, I had a very, very healthy friend that was a client, and he had bought the policy before these were available, and he had a stroke, because he was unable to do certain benefits, the daily activities, that plan would have paid out the rest of the life insurance in benefits tax-free to help him through the difficult time. He did eventually get a little better, but unfortunately the policy he had bought was before these products were available. So it can be combined into a life insurance, but the thing to remember is that it can also pretty much, if it's a really bad claim, wipe out the death benefit.
Right. And I don't know anybody who's 50 or 60 years old that hadn't had some type of event where they could have used something like this. We're going to be talking about Index Universal Life, kind of highlighting that, and also annuities a little later in the
sure.
show, but I see we have a caller, 4600, who has pressed the number one on his phone. caller 4600. State your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, yeah, Pianchi calling from the Midwest and the South. How are you?
All right. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just listening. I was just listening, taking notes. This is very good information. And I hope he leaves his contact at the end of the of your interview with him. But very good information.
Oh, okay,
well, good.
Great.
Well, thank you. If that's okay, this is, I don't know, Jansen, am I able to leave my name and phone number for contact?
Yeah, if you want to give your phone number now, that'd be fine. If not,
yeah,
I
okay.
can relay it.
My number is 916-200-9465. And my email address is admrktng@aol.com. So it's ADR marketing, there's no vowels, at AOL.com. So just bear in mind, I'm Pacific Standard Time. You know, give me a call if you have any specific questions or want more information.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. So let's talk about – oh, go ahead, Jansen. I'm sorry.
No, I was – go ahead.
Okay. Well, we were going to talk about in the remainder time we have, we're going to talk about a product called Index Universal Life and also annuities. And they kind of go hand in glove because when a person passes 40-ish and they start to get permanent – and I use that word permanent, their policies that will last them the rest of their life – There's a variety of different things. There's whole life. There's par whole life. There's traditional universal life. There's guaranteed universal life. And then there's index universal life. And instead of going over all of those types of products, I mean, it would take another couple hours, and we don't want to do that. I want to focus on a concept called index universal life. And
define index universal life for people that don't
okay,
know.
Okay, that's what I'm going to – I'll do that. That's what I'm going to do next. Yeah. So, you know, for those people that have extra funds and want to start building a retirement income, life insurance is still the last great tax haven in the United States economic system today. The reason is because the plan allows a person to take what we call tax-free, interest-free loans. So if a person designs and builds this product correctly, when they pass 65, 67, or 70 or whatever, they can then start borrowing on a systematic basis every year out of their policy a tax-free a benefit that's going to, you know, be in a relationship to how much they've put in, how much they have, and they'll be able to take that for the rest of their life. And the nice thing is the policies have a provision that if you ever borrow too much, they just freeze the rest and you still have a death benefit. Now, that's true on any cash value policy. The difference between index universal life and regular permanent policies is when the company gets the money over the cost of insurance, because there's always a cost of insurance because it is still a life insurance policy, which ultimately will benefit at the very end in one way or another. But the extra cash that goes in over and above the cost of insurance then is used to buy what they call indexes. And the index we're commonly know as the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, the S&P. There's many, many different indexes that companies use to invest the money in, but they don't actually put it into the stock market. They're put in what they call covered calls. So therefore, there's never any loss to the customer in terms of their cash value. There's only two things that can happen year over year, is either the client will receive an increase of interest or return, if you will, or not, because it's a zero to sometimes unlimited return based on the what happens to the indexes that year. However, in the other option, if the indexes tank, let's say the market drops dramatically or whatever, the beautiful thing is that the principal on these products is always guaranteed. What you got at your last anniversary, let's say you've built up $250,000 or $100,000 based on the growth at that point, and then the stock market falls out from under it, the nice thing is you still have the $100,000 because you cannot lose principal. The only kind of plan that you can lose principal, I don't have a license for anymore, is called a variable universal life. And those are the plans where the market can fall out from under you. One day you've got $250,000, the next day you've got $100,000. And index universal life uses the indexes to track the return, but you're not in the market. Your returns are based on the market. And some of the average returns can be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9% per year, based on the company, based on the index that's chosen, and it can be a phenomenal retirement program if a person puts in the money long enough and puts in enough money to justify it. If they don't have the extra money, it's a terrible product. It's the best if a person has time and extra funds to throw at it, so that in retirement they can then benefit from that extra money they put in. Do you have any questions, Anthony?
Yeah, you mentioned $250,000. People accumulate $250,000 in these index universal life policies that they can use for their retirement?
Yeah, I mean, it's we have customers that put in $500 to $1,000 a month. Based on the return of the indexes and so forth, it can be very, very, very nice. What we do is we really minimize the amount of life insurance just enough to qualify it under the tax laws of the United States. And so, therefore, it takes not a genius, but it takes a tactician to design these products in a certain way, in order that it maximizes the growth and minimizes any costs, because there are costs, because it is still life insurance. And so it's really part of, it's like the old TV commercials about Cheerios, you know, it's part of a balanced breakfast. I mean, you couldn't live on just that alone. And so therefore, if done correctly and part of a balanced portfolio for retirement, it can be extremely, extremely beneficial to the client if done correctly.
Right. Index universal life insurance. What about index annuities? Or did you want to talk about annuities?
Yeah, well, let's go into annuities. And so there's two really directions that an annuity can be designed. One is what we call fixed, which doesn't follow the market, as I talked about. And the other kind is indexed, which, as I mentioned before, it's you can't lose money. The principal is guaranteed, but it will follow the market. If it goes up, it'll go up. If the market goes down, your principal stays safe. And it's a beautiful, it's like a ratchet. It can either be at zero or it can go higher. It can't go lower. And that's the beautiful thing about it. So let me talk first of all about fixed annuities. A fixed annuity, when I talk to clients or I talk to agents, the question is that if you've got money in the bank, are you happy with the tenth of a percent or the quarter of a percent that the bank is giving you today? And most people will just say, oh, no, but it's a sign of the time. And I'll say, yes, but it's not the times, it's the place. And they say, well, what do you mean by that? I says, well, you've got your money in a very top-heavy kind of an organization, and the banks cannot afford, based on the way they operate, they cannot afford to pay you any better than that. That's just end of story. However, would you like to see how you could get 5 to 10 times more tax deferred? So you get a pure rate, you don't get any taxes on it, and perpetuate that as long as you want. And the answer is always a unanimous yes. And when in today's day and age, with the fixed interest rates on annuities for a 5-year period, they're anywhere from 2.5% to 3%. And that's guaranteed for 5 years. So for 5 years and under, a fixed account is probably a good place for a person's money, whether it's $10,000 or whether it's $1 million. It's a good spot. Now, if the person has a longer timeline and would like to benefit from the upside of the stock market and doesn't mind seeing a year that they get a zero return, when maybe the next year they get a 12% return, and the next year they get a 2% return, and the next year they get a 20% return, and the next year they get a 0% return, and the next year they get a 0% return. If a person has the stomach for getting no return on the money, which isn't much different than what they're getting at the bank anyway, then an index product might be a better option, especially if they've got a longer timeline, 7 years plus, perhaps 10 years, to use an index product. Now, annuities are really good for two kinds of savings. We call them qualified or non-qualified. So qualified money is money that is qualified to be deducted from your taxes, like an IRA, 401k, 403b, something like that, that you've not paid taxes on, that's called qualified. So whether a person's got a couple thousand or a couple million, that's an annuity is a good place. It's a safe place. The other kind is called non-qualified, money that is just sitting in the bank in the checking account, that has never been added into or deducted from one's taxes. It's just pocket change money that a person's been squirreling away under their mattress in the bank, and that's called non-qualified. So annuities can be used for that as well, but it really all depends on, you know, what a person's timeline is, what their goals are, what their strategy is. There's a number of moving parts that determine whether it's qualified, non-qualified, fixed, or indexed. But the beautiful thing about the insurance industry is they don't have a store on every corner like the banks, and their investments are different. And so therefore, for the last 45 years that I've been in this business, I've always been able to get my clients 5 to 10 times more than they can get in the bank. And so that's mainly for, you know, the larger sums. If a person, you and I talked earlier, Jansen, about a person that may have a smaller amount and maybe they're getting older, and we have a product that's called a one-pay life insurance, which is a phenomenal product that, depending on the person's health and their age, they could put in, let's say, $10,000 and one-time pay a $20,000 or $30,000 life insurance. So it's a wonderful product for people that are leaving the $10,000 that they've got in the bank. They're leaving it for their kid, their grandkid. And my question to them was always, well, why do you only want to leave them that amount? And they say, well, that's all I've got. And I say, well, yeah, well, I can turn that 10 into 20 right now if you're interested. And they go, well, how do you do that? I said, well, let me ask you a few questions. How's your health? Blah, blah, blah. And generally speaking, I can provide even a person not so good at health a one-time pay that gives more money in the event of their death. They want to leave for the burial. They want to leave for junior. They want to leave for grandson. You know, whatever the case, it's a wonderful tool. It's better than leaving it in the bank. Because if you go to the bank and say, Mr. Banker, if I've got $10,000 in your bank and I die tomorrow, how much are you going to pay for my funeral? And after they stop laughing, you know, they'll say, well, $10,000, maybe a penny or two more for interest. But you say, well, my insurance guy says I can get $20,000. He goes, well, I go with your insurance guy. So it's not magic. It's not science. It's just numbers. It's having your money in the right place to do the right things. And the insurance industry has been maligned for many years, but knowing what I know, and it's the right tool for the right situation. You can't go wrong.
I got a question.
Right, right. And this is called, go ahead, Bianca, go ahead.
I got a sibling that'll be graduating from college. He's going to have over $100,000 gifted to him for an achievement. Where's the best place for them to put that? They're about 24 years old.
To give them the $100,000?
That's what he'll receive for his achievement.
Oh, I got you. Okay, so he's receiving that amount of money. Where is the best place for him to put it? Well, that's the quick and not complete answer would be I would put it in a fixed annuity short term, because at that age, in the next 5 years, he may want to use that money for a down payment on a house. I don't know what his goals are, what his other financial situation. An annuity certainly wouldn't be the worst place to put it. It'd be a whole lot better than the bank of you know, next door. I wouldn't put it into a life insurance at that age, especially for that amount. I would think that probably for short-term planning, I would use an annuity, and we have one.
And on long-term planning, what would you? Because his degree, he would have a pretty good job, well, actually an excellent job. But for long-term planning, like for retirement, what type of return on would that amount at this young age bring by the time they got ready to retire?
I mean, really, an index annuity would certainly be my choice. I mean, if the person, I've diversified over the years in different, you know, the stock market and properties and various things. So I've got the temperament to handle that, and not everybody does. So if a person is not thinking about maybe putting it into a home as a down payment or and they just want to park it somewhere and not worry about it, I would choose definitely an index annuity, and one that has some good buckets, some good indexes, and over the long term, he'll average probably anywhere from 6 to 8% interest long term, as long as he can overlook the years with the zeros. And it's celebrating the years with the 12s, long term, he'll probably average 6-7%.
Okay. And that's annually, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a look back. I mean, you go out 20 years, you look back for the highs and the lows, that's probably what it will average. It's not a fixed interest rate. It's not guaranteed to be that, but it's going to vary based on the indexes. It'll never be less than zero. They'll never lose money, but his return in any given year or two might be zero.
Is it compounded?
Well, it's paid on what's accumulated at the end of the year. So, yeah, in a sense, it compounds because the return is based on the ending balance from the year before, which includes the any return that they got that year. So if a person got a 6% return on, let's say they got $100,000 and they've got $106,000. Well, the next year's return is based on the $106,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jensen, did you have any questions that you wanted to go over, or did have I covered something too fast or not covered something?
Yeah, you know what, being a little bit of a guy that's interested in investing, you mentioned covered calls. Do you know, tell me a little bit about covered calls. This is just my own curiosity since you mentioned the word. Is that
well, unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to explain that because I no longer have the securities license. But in essence, a call is buying the opportunity to purchase a stock later on for a certain established price. So if you've got a stock that's $100 and you think that stock is going to go up, if you buy a call at $100 and that stock goes to $150, you can then buy that stock at $100 and have it worth $150, or you turn around and sell that call and that call will have a value, and that's all, you know, it's a tremendous amount of moving parts, but the only thing that you can lose is a price you paid for that call. And so therefore the insurance companies, if they take that extra money and the interest that would have been normally credited to it in the annuity or the life insurance, and they use that to buy the call, if the call pans out, then because the value of the index went up, then that amount of money based on a formula then will return into the person's account. But if the index ended up at the end of the year or whatever the period of time is flat or went down, then there's no returns or growth put into the the annuity or the life insurance. It's all based on if that call retires a value or retires of no value. That determines whether there's a zero return or a 12% return.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like something right now that I'm going to hold off on, Alice.
Sure. I mean, yeah, and you probably should get someone who's currently licensed in securities about calls and puts and things like that. But, I mean, the point that I wanted to bring out is that they're not playing with the person's principal. They're only playing with the amount of money that would have been given to them anyway based on interest. So like a fixed annuity, if they would have gotten 3% interest, what the index annuity says is that we'll take that 3% and we'll buy some indexes with it. And if those indexes turn out good, we're going to give you 12% interest that year. But if they retire worthless, you don't get anything. You get a zero. So the person has to determine, do they want to be zero 1 year and 12% the next? Or do they just want to be like the tortoise? You just kept plugging along at 3% year over year, 3%, 3%, 3%. And the rabbit, the hare, is going 0%, 6%, 12%, 0%, 0%. So it's just a person's their timeline and what their temperament is and what they can tolerate. Some people just want a fixed account that they can count on every year, and other people are willing to take a little bit more of a longer timeline.
Right. And so we've got about another 5 minutes. Alan, I want to talk a little bit more about life insurance with living benefits, though. There are policies that people can get that if they were to say they have a car accident, is that something that they could be helped with living benefits from a life insurance policy?
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned stroke, cancer, heart attacks, but what about somebody gets hurt in an accident?
Right. Well, that's a good question. There's two types of accelerated benefit riders, ABRs. One is for critical illness. A critical event is heart attack, stroke, or cancer. okay? The other one that is in the life insurance, it's called chronic illness, and it's like a long-term care type of a concept because it's based on the same triggers. And what it says is if the person is unable to do 2 out of 6 standard activities of daily living, and those are feeding oneself, walking 100 feet, bathing oneself, clothing oneself. So there's 6 different ADLs, activities of daily living. So if a person has a car accident and they're mangled pretty badly, paralyzed, slip and fall even, something that prohibits them from being able to do at least 2 of those 6 activities of daily living, then that feature, chronic illness benefit, will then allow them to take part of their life insurance. But it has to, it won't start for 90 days, so the person's condition has to be at least there for 90 days before the insurance company will even consider it to be something that will be long term. Now, a person may only go for the next 9 months, and then for some reason or some ability spring back to their feet and they're okay. Well, then that benefit will stop. But if they're seriously and disabled, and it goes on, it'll go on until only about 10% of that life insurance is left, and the insurance company will then freeze that as a life insurance until they die. So they get about 90% of their policy based on either critical or chronic illness.
Oh, okay. So, Alan, got a few more minutes. It's been very eye-opening having you on the show. Have to have you again back sometime when you have the time.
Sure.
Now, was there anything else that you wanted to talk? I know we have a lot of people that are listening. They are seniors. Anything that you wanted to convey to them today about maybe them or their grandkids or kids? I know one caller called in. He had a mid-20-year-old. Anything that you can say?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be done. I mean, if you're a grandparent, then and you've got grandchildren, you've got some extra dollars, start planning on gifting, naming the grandkids perhaps in your will, and getting a life insurance. It'll pay off far greater than any savings you could even begin to accumulate, especially if you're in halfway decent health. And there's also I discourage kids from getting saving for college, at an early age, when I recommend that they get a grandparent that's still, fairly healthy, and buying a life insurance on the grandparent. And whether the grandparent dies before they enter college or after they leave college, if there are loans, then that benefit that the grandparents, either they pay for it or their children pay for it. But having a life insurance is a tremendous college funding vehicle that could either, like I said, pay off before college, or if there are loans and death occurs later, you pay off the loans with the life insurance. So grandparents have a tremendous ability to, if they've already satisfied their own needs, there's a lot of tools and a lot of things that they can set up and do for their grandkids that would take a whole nother hour to talk about.
Right. Well, Alan, we've got about 40 seconds left on the show. I want to thank you again for coming on the show today. It's been very eye-opening. There are things that we could have talked about more, but we did what we could do. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Save it for another time.
Okay. All right, then. Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in to the show today. Remember that you can get recordings of these shows by going to blogtalkradio.com and clicking in the Council of Elders. See you next week, God willing, everybody. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you.